live from the mist-enshrouded mountaintop fortress that is X and Y Communications headquarters. You're listening to the world-famous Mountaintop Podcast. And now, here's your host, Scott McKay.
Hey, all right. How's it going, gentlemen? This is your boy, Scott McKay, hailing from sunny San Antonio, Texas, coming at you with another episode of the world-famous Mountaintop Podcast. Today, I have a new friend of mine with me. We just had a very erudite intellectual discussion about all sorts of things, so I'm ever more excited than even I was anticipating this show now to have him on. His name is Dr. Alex Avila. And he is a clinical and forensic psychologist, and he specializes in areas like love, compatibility, and self-esteem. He's the author of Love Types, which is an international bestseller, The Gift of Shyness, Guys Types, and his book that I want to focus on today, The Secrets of Happiness. So, Dr. Alex Avila, welcome, man.
Thank you, man. It's a pleasure to be here, and you did pronounce my name right, which is great, Avila.
Well, I live in Azatlan territory, you know.
Yes, definitely so.
North of the old Mexican border. So
yes, I understand exactly.
Pretty good on my Hispanic surnames, after all.
Yes, you got it.
Yeah, so I'm happy to talk to you about happiness. This is a show I've been wanting to do for ages, but I've just had a bear of a time finding the right guy or the right woman, for that matter, to have on and talk about this. Mm. So you have written a whole book on the secrets to happiness. And, you know, given how few people are actually happy in this day and age, Alex, there's got to be a secret to it, because it's a pretty well-kept one. So talk to me about that.
Yes, definitely. Well, The Secrets of Happiness is actually a modern fable, kind of written in the style of Paulo Coelho's Alchemist. And what happens is that we have a pompous psychiatrist named Harry who goes up to the mountain to find the secrets of happiness from a monk named Tanaka, who has to be an Eastern philosopher. And the psychiatrist thinks he knows the answers. He's schooled in the Western ways. He's very arrogant, and he wants to use this as a best-selling book. But what happens is that he finds a surprise. The monk actually breaks him down psychologically and even physically to get down to his true nature and just discover the three secrets. And the three secrets are very simple. In fact, you might think, well, I know this, but many people don't in terms of applying it. And the three secrets are gratitude, joyful optimism, and forgiveness. So with these three secrets, the psychiatrist transformed his life, and you know, it's really a beautiful story. But it gives us the real meaning of what happiness is. It's not about money, not about a certain power or position. These are internal traits that we can all develop, and it's a really great thing to look at in our lives.
Well, that really resonates as extremely intuitive to me. I think you pretty much nailed it. You've got gratitude, right?
Yes.
You've got optimism. Now, you qualified the word optimism with another word. What was that?
Joyful optimism.
Joyful optimism. Yeah. Yes. Joy is a wonderful emotion.
Yes,
and also, you also had forgiveness.
Yes. Very
now,
powerful.
If you're holding this pain inside, you've been hurt by someone else. You've been hurt by a situation. What that does is that creates bitterness, and that bitterness is the opposite of happiness. You know, hate is the opposite of love. Some people would say that it isn't, but hate is not loving. Hate is bitterness and all those negative emotions. Yes. And when you forgive someone, you get to release all of that. And, you know, what I always tell people, and of course, we'll take these one at a time.
Sure.
What I always tell people is, you know, the more you let someone who's brought something in your life, done unto you something that was not favorable to you, the more you focus on them and burn inside for them, not only are you contributing to your own unhappiness, but you're giving someone superpowers over your happiness that they don't deserve.
Definitely, yeah. And then forgiveness, for some people, it's hard because, you know, they may have hurt you in reality. Maybe they abused you and they had cruelty towards you. But again, it's liberating yourself, you know, from that person, you know, the self-liberation. But the other thing that I talk about, and actually this is something that's very interesting, is that many times we can forgive others, but we can't forgive ourselves.
Wow, yes.
So self-forgiveness, this is the power. And the book actually has a story related to that in terms of past relationships. And self-forgiveness or self-compassion, we know, is one of the keys of happiness, to be able to move away from regret, because regret is what holds us back. We're tied to the past through regret. And many times we actually may repeat the same mistake over and over again because we feel weak. We feel somehow inferior because we made that mistake. So it's like we have a little voice in our head that says, you're stupid, you did this mistake. And then we keep repeating the same mistake until we get to the point of self-forgiveness and self-compassion that, you know, I was at a certain level. Maybe I was in sixth grade when I made that mistake, but now I'm in the college level psychologically or spiritually. So I'm not going to make the same mistake. I'm going to move forward and onward. So that's an important step. Self-forgiveness is one of the keys of happiness.
You know, I think in our Western quote unquote developed world, you know, one of the factors that I strongly believe instigates that lack of self-forgiveness, if you will, which of course is tied to self-esteem, is that you're really able to hide your problems to the outside world. We collectively and personally are able to do that through wealth, basically. We say, you know, how are you? And the answer is, I'm fine.
Yes.
And we look at everybody around us and we go, everybody's doing better than I am. We look at everybody's social media highlight reel and go, they're living a more exciting life. Better off than I'll ever be. And it just makes us feel like total failures when in reality, everybody's got their own shitstorm to deal with. And yet we don't ever seem to hear about that because we're so good at camouflaging to the outside world. Do you think that has something to do with it?
Yes, I think it does. The masks, we talked about that in a different show in terms of dating and relationships, but yeah, we all have a mask on and we're trying to present that image of success or happiness. And maybe inside, you know, we're feeling pain. We're sad, we're frustrated, and you know, it's a human nature. And as a result, we start to become artificial. And one of the things I talk about in the book is authenticity, you know, to being who you really are inside. And maybe you're vulnerable, maybe you have some weaknesses inside you, but you can become stronger by revealing those things in certain ways in the right time and place, whether it's through therapy or maybe other ways. So I think it is important to kind of get to know what it is inside you that's holding you back, you know, that fear, that regret and those kind of things, and forgive yourself for previous mistakes. You believe that you are under a different influence. You know, I call it the negative thought process, you know, the negative weakness. And that is what made you act maybe in a certain way. Maybe you hurt someone, maybe you hurt yourself. It could be addictions or other things. But once you get to that point where you start to forgive yourself, you start to take a step toward your authentic nature, which is beautiful. You know, all of us are beautiful inside in whatever form we are, but we need to get into that beauty, into that authenticity. And that's what it takes sometimes to go through the pain.
Well, I think having that freedom to feel vulnerable enough to be authentic is a huge contributor to your happiness. Because if you're feeling like you're living a lie your entire life, then you're never going to be fulfilled. And that lack of fulfillment is going to make one unhappy. And I'm, by the way, a huge believer in the power and strength associated with vulnerability. People think of it as weakness. And of course, in many ways, it's strength, isn't it?
Exactly. I think Brené Brown came up with a book that's been very popular talking about vulnerability as a strength.
Sure.
So it's kind of the Eastern approach, you know, that strength can be weakness or weakness can be strength. And if we know how to use it properly, definitely can be. Someone who has maybe a short attention span, maybe that can be a strength because they can multitask. Someone who is maybe a little bit late or disorganized, maybe they're very spontaneous. Maybe they bring joy into people's lives as a result. So, you know, what it can be considered a weakness can become a strength as long as you are aware of it and embrace it, you know, as what it is. I think that's one of the keys, right? To start to embrace, you know, even the, you know, Jung talking about the shadow sides, you know, the so-called dark sides of the personality that, you know, may have some positive benefits if we can use them in the right way, you know, transmute them.
Well, it also depends on our personality types. And I think another thing that's particularly insidious and very detrimental to one's happiness is comparing ourselves to someone else. I wish I was more like them. I wish my personality type was like them. I wish my gifts were theirs. And that jealousy that comes from that starts feeding that which keeps us from being happy, doesn't it?
Definitely, yeah. The envy of others. Now, in social psychology, we have what's called downward comparison. You actually feel better when you compare yourselves with people that are doing worse than you.
Right.
Which is not necessarily a positive thing, but people do that as well. So, yeah, there are many ways to look at that. But I think just recognizing in Spanish, we have a word called don, D-O-N, which means God-given ability, your talent, you know, your nature. So we all need to have that and develop it. So for some of it, it's speaking, writing, maybe it's mechanics, being a good parent, being a good friend. Dealing with other aspects of life, you know, so whatever that don is, that talent, and that's what we need to develop. And that's what gives us our self-confidence because all of us are unique. For some people, They have a talent in carpentry, or other people at sales, whatever it is that they have that they love. That is their essential nature. So the more they develop that, the more they develop this don, the more they don't need to compare themselves with other people. You know, I have my abilities, you have yours. We can live as kings or queens on earth if we really admit that to ourselves.
Yeah, but people just love to upwardly compare, don't they? And it's never a positive thing for one's happiness or one's self-esteem. I'm reminded of a story I read where they were talking about the Mount Rushmore of basketball.
Yes.
You know, the four greatest players of all time.
Right.
And at Michael least Jordan two players. Right, right. Exactly. Mm-hmm. And at least two players felt, quote unquote, disrespected and were tweeting up a storm of, yes, you know, vitriol because they were left out of the discussion. It's like, by God, we're talking about the four greatest people who've ever played this sport in the history of the world. You know, if you're even in this discussion or in an ancillary way, feel self-important enough to even assert yourself into the conversation, you're a darn good basketball player. And, you know, that should be enough. You know, look at all the people who are in the D League or who, you know, hacked in high school or college and never got anywhere with it. Exactly. Why are we comparing ourselves to them? Why do we have to be the best in the world or else we failed? You know, I'm reminded also of a time I was talking to a friend of mine who was in the same sport I was participating in. And in this sport, there are different skill levels. And he was going to go from the intermediate level to the expert level. And he was kind of sandbagging by my estimation and the estimation of others. And the question was posed to him, why don't you just turn expert, man? And he's like, well, I can't beat so-and-so, so I don't deserve to be expert yet. Mm-hmm. And the so-and-so he named was national number one overall. You know, and there are thousands of people in the expert class. That's the kind of insidious, yes, comparison that keeps us, I think, from contentment.
Exactly. Which I think, exactly. So my son actually played some college ball. He's about 6'6", big guy, a little semi-pro basketball. So I understand that competitive aspect of what you're saying. But you know something, Scott, and this actually brings us to our other point, that gratitude is actually, yeah, one of the kind of antidotes to this envy and jealousy you're talking about. Because when you're grateful for what you have, your whole life changes. You know, you really feel appreciated. You feel blessed. You feel life is wonderful. You know, I'm receiving these wonderful things. And research actually shows in positive psychology that people who keep a gratitude journal, they write three things they're grateful for every day, have 30% less depression and 40% better sleep just by keeping this gratitude journal, writing three things you're grateful for. So it's an amazing a thing they found research-wise in terms of depression and things like that, when you're grateful for what you have. So if I were to ask you, Scott, right now, what are three things you're grateful for right now? What would you say?
Well, I would say, first of all, that I expected you to make this segue based on what we were talking about, because that's okay, where I was headed to.
Okay, see, we're thinking alike.
As far as what you just said, I'm fascinated by the fact that you get better sleep when you have gratitude. I mean, yes, you know, whatever lets you sleep better at night is actually a very objectively real factor, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Think about it. We have in the East, they call it the monkey mind, you know, the chattering thoughts, you know, what should I do tomorrow? And it's not going to work out. And what's happening? So gratitude actually instills that monkey mind, you know, that chattering thought process, and gives us a kind of a peace of mind that, you know, my life is good and I appreciate it. Tomorrow will be good as well. So it's a whole different, you know, energy that you have, a nature, you know, a calmness, a peace, and a comfort. So, Scott, what are the three things for you that you're grateful for? Obviously, we're here today together. But besides that, what other three things are you grateful for?
Well, I'll tell you, I'm hard-pressed to come up with three things because I actually participate in the very exercise you're talking about quite a
really?
Bit.
Really? Oh, wow.
If I have to cut it down to three, you know, the ability to be as free as I am, to have the freedom that not only as an American citizen, but with the lifestyle we've chosen. Plus, I'm grateful for how prosperous we are every day of my life. I never take that for granted. And that comes in large part, I think, a deepened sense of that from my travels. And of course, the relationships in my life, chiefly among those, my beautiful and wonderful wife, who, despite the schadenfreude extended upon me by people who are hoping to be able to compare themselves downward to me sometime in the future. Oh, okay. We are still together and we love each other every bit as much as we always have, if not more. You know, it's funny because you were talking about that downward comparison. And when I first started as a dating coach, Emily and I were relatively newlyweds. You know, actually, when we first started, we were dating. And I would have the men going their own way types before they had a hashtag, before there were hashtags, guys who, you know, naturally gravitated to that mindset, you know, very negative towards women in general and relationships in particular with them that are long-term, especially marriage. And they would say, ah, you know, check with me in 2 years after the lead singer for Motley Crue runs off with her and, you know, takes okay. your children and half your income and you die young and blah, blah, blah. And, you know, I think they're still waiting for that all to fall apart, and it hasn't. So that's very much where I feel my happiness lies. And there's so many little ways in my life where I'm so grateful for everything. You know, you talked about gratitude.
Yes.
And I've noticed that you and I are thinking a lot alike on lots of things, but we get there from different semantical routes.
Yes.
I always had kind of this mantra playing in my mind that contentment equals happiness. But you challenged that by talking about forgiveness, which I think is a different dimension. Yes. And also talking about joyful optimism, which is something that I absolutely espouse, but I think is actually another angle to happiness. But this whole idea of contentment or gratitude, which I think are almost synonymous, there maybe are some different facets of those words, but it's largely tied to being happy with what you have rather than constantly reaching for something you don't. And I think that is a huge tenet of happiness.
Yes. I think the idea is that you're a fortunate person, you know, whether you believe in luck or destiny or God or whatever source you believe in, that there's something about you that is blessed, you know, that is given a great advantage, and that you can give that to others too. I mean, just as simple as right now, we're in California, the sun is shining, you know, I hear the birds out here. That by itself is a beautiful thing. You know, you're alive.
Yeah.
You know, they say that there have been 100 billion people have died in the history of humanity, and only about 7 billion are alive right now. So that means we're one of the 7% club. We're alive at this very moment. And it's an amazing thing to be alive. At some point, we will not be alive, and then some other generation will take over. But to be grateful just for that, you know, for this very moment that we have, we're breathing, right? We're seeing, we're sensing, and we're loving. What I really like is that you talk about your wife and the love you have for her and also for others. And that is something to be amazingly grateful for, that we can express love. And sometimes people say, well, wait a minute, what if the one I love doesn't love me back? But I say, just by the process of loving, you have become a stronger and better person. You have grown. You have developed your love muscles or your happiness muscles. It's like we go to the gym and we work out at the gym, but we don't think about working out our happiness, our internal natures. So that's the beautiful part about being grateful, you know, for every little thing, including our capacity to love. And even if we're hurt, you know, we can use that as sometimes a positive as well. We learn our lesson and we move on. So that's really wonderful to be grateful every day.
So people who are habitually complaining aren't habitually happy, are they?
Yeah, really. They basically look at the present and say, well, look at everything that's wrong. I don't know what was going to happen. So they're not really living in the moment. Because if you think about it, forgiveness is taking care of the past, you know, resolving issues. Gratitude is dealing with the moment, you know, enjoying the present moment and that life is great for you and you're happy with it. And when you complain and you're bitter, then you take away that positive energy and you become what's called the poor me mentality, which, Scott, I'm sure you've heard about.
Yeah.
Where, you know, look at me, look at my life, and, you know, things are bad. And maybe, you know, you've gone through some bad times. Maybe the people have hurt you, but you can change some of that. You know, you can change it through your mentality. So that's where the Secrets of Happiness is such a powerful dynamic, because it's saying that you can attract and become happiness. You know, you become happiness internally and you attract it externally.
Well, closely related to that is ye old poverty mentality versus abundance mentality, correct?
Yes. The idea that I call it the creative mentality, that you can, you know, the world is constantly expanding, growing and creating. You know, there's more money, money supply, there's more things produced, more technology, also more love, you could say. And things can be constantly creating. But if you live under competition mentality, you know, I got to get something from someone else. I got to beat them at the deal. Then it's a scarcity mentality. It's a fear mentality. You know, I don't have enough. You know, I always have to be better than someone else. And that's a whole different mindset. So I encourage people to develop the creative mentality, you know, that there's an abundance. And that's the beauty of that.
You know, I'm fascinated by how you talk about the contentment part, you know, being the present. And the forgiveness dealing with the past. And that, of course, leaves the other tenet, which is joyful optimism, which is clearly routed towards the future. And so what you're dealing with is a timeline of personal happiness in one's life.
Yes.
Before we go ahead and dive off the ledge of joyful optimism, I'm compelled to ask this question because I'd love to hear your answer.
Sure.
Why is this so difficult for people? Why is almost everybody so unhappy, it seems? People are complaining. They're not content enough. I mean, is it the highlight reel on social media? Is it how good we are at covering up our own problems so nobody else will see it? It just seems like there are people in other countries, even developing countries, where they don't have a whole lot of wealth, and people are just laughing and spending more quality time with each other than we do here.
Yeah, I've actually done studies. Certain countries, like I think it's Costa Rica and a couple other ones, have some of the happiest happiness levels in the world. And it's not really based on industrialization or money, but yeah, it's based on the family, loving, spending time with each other. And money can be helpful to about $80,000 or $100,000 level, but after that, it doesn't really improve your happiness that much. If you're very poor, it can hurt your happiness to an extent, but after a certain amount of money, it doesn't really make that much difference. But I think the main issue is that many people are externally focused on things that can they think they bring the happiness, whether it's relationships or finances or some social aspect, as opposed to internal development, which is basically being a happier person internally, working on your patience, for example. Many times people are very impatient and they rush around and they're always trying to beat time, and time always beats them. But if you can develop patience, just take your time walking slowly. And I even tell people intentionally choose the slower line sometimes at a grocery store just to see what it feels like. You might be pressured. Oh, I got to get out of here quick. But part of you says, wait a minute, I'm going to master my impatience. I'm going to sit in this line or we'll stand in the line and I'm going to maybe observe people and be aware of my surroundings and maybe even talk to someone. Maybe I can even make a friend as I wait in this longer line. So I'm mastering my internal state of impatience. And as a result, I feel better about myself. I even feel happier because my focus has shifted from external to internal and I'm trying to raise my level of, joy and happiness internally. So I think that's what we need to look at more is how to reverse that tendency. So the idea basically is that we internalize things we want to work on ourselves, and that change our mindset. The key is to be happy despite circumstances, because many times people are happy only if circumstances turn out in their favor. I get the raise, I get the relationship I want, I get this, I get that. But what if they don't? Or what if they get it and then they lose it? Then they lose their happiness. So that's what we need to work on.
Yeah, I think for a lot of people, the amount of money that's going to make me happy is some amount slightly more than I have right now.
Yes.
It's always going to be that amount. I have to tell you, at the risk of not sounding joyfully optimistic, Every line I get into at the grocery store suddenly becomes the longest line, even if there's only one person ahead of me, because I absolutely have an incredible knack for having the person in front of me, forget their checkbook or need to send something back or they forgot something or their credit card doesn't work.
Now, do you get impatient, Scott, or are you able to say, I'm going to meditate, I'm going to stay in this line, or what's your mindset?
Oh, I'm not going to sit here and pretend I'm the most patient guy in the world. I mean, I'm an oldest and I'm a type A and I'm a hustler. So of course I get impatient.
Sure.
But I've learned to have a sense of humor about how that is a constant in my life. Whenever I get into a line, it suddenly becomes the longest one. And I say it to the person behind the counter, here's what goes on in my life. And they laugh. And I try to crack a joke about it.
Yeah. Well, that's kind of optimism, Scott, because optimists look on the bright side of things. Mm-hmm. So you can even say, well, I'm a popular person. I'm attracting people. I'm like some kind of a superhero or something. So optimism is looking at the bright side of things. A pessimist would say, well, look at this line and, I don't know what to do. But you can say, well, I'm the attracting of people. So that could be a whole different way to look at it.
Well, there was a guy who got into the under 15 items line ahead of me the other day with about 25 items.
Uh-oh.
And I was starting to give him a little bit of a stink eye and tap my fingers a little bit. And those efforts were redoubled when his wife suddenly shoved her way past me with about 10 more things. And,
ooh, okay.
And then they didn't have their money, and then their credit card didn't work.
That's when you pulled out your martial arts techniques and went after them. So
now that would have got me arrested. I actually was very quiet. I was very proud of myself. I didn't say anything. I'm not a caustic person. I don't like to make arguments with people. I'll be assertive when I have to, because I think that's part of being a man. I'm not anybody's,
B-I-T-C-H.
But you have to choose your battles wisely, and that wasn't a hill I was willing to die on that day.
Exactly.
So anyway, back to happiness, which is what we're supposed to be talking about here.
Yes.
There's another leg on this stool that we haven't talked about yet, and that, of course, is joyful optimism.
Yes.
Now, Alex, the first thing I want you to unravel, just in case anybody happens to be thinking along the same lines as I am, is how can this whole idea of being grateful, gratitude, contentment, whatever you want to call it, how can this whole idea of being grateful, this contentment, reconcile peacefully with optimism towards wanting something else in the future and wanting more? I know there's a way you're going to reconcile it, but I think it's important to make that differentiation, so go for it.
Well, my gratitude is, again, feeling the wonderful feeling for what you have right now, you know, the now. And then optimism is basically transferring that into the future. You know, I have great things now, but I'm going to have even more great things or great things in the future. And it comes from the root word optimus, which means to expect the best. And that's the key to optimistic people. You know, things may happen to them that are bad. You know, they might get a divorce, suffer abuse, trauma. I work a lot with trauma victims in different kind of cases psychologically. And sometimes these people are stuck in their pain, but other times they can move beyond it. They can transform it. They can look at so-called the bright side. I had one of my clients, a woman who had a son coming from college from the East Coast, and she lived on the West Coast. After years of, you know, he's been in college in a way, he came home, and the first night he was home, she was so happy, he went out with his cousin. He met a girl that he made a little comment to. He didn't think it was too bad, but they took it personally, the woman, and she brought her family members with bats and knives and ended up killing the young man, you know, her only son. So she was devastated, you know, and through therapy, we worked with her, and she was crying all the time. But then she realized that one thing that she loved is children. So she ended up realizing that she wanted to be a foster mother and to give back, you know, to other children without their parents. And that helped her in some ways heal. Actually, she'll never get over the loss of her son. But it was an amazing triumph for her. And she developed even an optimistic nature related to children, you know, a cheery nature. And many times that's the key, you know, for the optimist. You can go through tragedy, you can go through problems, but you still look at that bright side. What can I learn from this? What can I do better? How can I help more people? That's the beauty of the optimist. And they're always looking at that positive side. And the other thing is, Scott, I know you're an analytical guy, and you may have heard the term realistic pessimism. Pessimists in some ways are more realistic than optimists. You know, they see things as they are. And sometimes that can even be useful. You know, you can find something to critique. You can learn from a mistake that you can observe. But then the problem with pessimists is that they get so focused on the negative that they don't see the positive, and they start to feel depressed. So the idea that the optimist is happier, they may not always see everything, but they are able to take the good from the bad. And one of the things I like to teach people is to have realistic optimism. You know, dark sides of life, there are tragedies and difficulties, but you can always transform it. You can always look at the good side of it. And that's what makes you feel optimistic and happy.
You know, that is the standard comeback when someone's accused of being a pessimist. They'll come back with, oh, I'm a realist. Yes. Because I don't think anybody sees being viewed as a pessimist as a compliment. And I don't think people want to be viewed as a pessimist. It's just like everybody thinks they have a sense of humor, right?
Right.
But certainly, this idea that the sky is falling all the time is not going to make one happy. But you can't be a Pollyanna either. You can't say, oh, everything's going to be unicorns and daisies when it's not. So you have to look at things from a realistic point of view. But I think you can also trust that whatever you're able to affect is going to affect things for the best. Some things are out of your circle of influence. Some things are within it. Insofar as it's within, you do something positive with it.
Definitely. I mean, because you think about realistic people, you know, they're going to buy the car insurance, the life insurance, you know, they're going to, you know, check their car for safety. And those are good things. But the key is to combine that with the idea that, you know, life can be better. You know, I can improve, you know, good things will come to me. And to have that kind of mindset where, you know, whatever happens to me, I can make it better. That's the idea with the optimist. So many of our, you know, great business leaders have been optimists, inventors. You've heard of the story of Edison, and he went through like 10,000 failed experiments before he discovered the right one for the light bulb.
Right. And so Lincoln lost like 10 elections before he won. Yeah.
Definitely. Yeah. So they're optimists, right? Maybe a little bit unrealistic in some ways, but they succeeded to a very high level because they maintained that optimism. And that brings persistence. It brings motivation despite the obstacles.
What I find fascinating about this future orientation of happiness is it answers a question that I've personally struggled with over the past few years. And I mean, hopefully this doesn't make people vomit, but as we've already established on this show, I am a pretty happy guy.
Yes.
Matter of fact, I've said to myself, one of my biggest problems, actually I've said to myself, self, one of your biggest problems is you could die happy now. I mean, yes. with my accomplishments and yes. my adventures and mm-hmm. what's happened. And I just feel more blessed than a guy has the right to be, even at the yes. age I am now. But what you're talking about, I think, is a tremendously valuable solution to what can be an existential problem. Mm-hmm. And that's, okay, I'm happy. Now what? You know,
yes. I
mean, because if you stay stagnant, natural entropy dictates things are going to fall apart.
Right.
So I can't just stay here in my little happiness pod, like, you know, Luke Skywalker on his Irish island, you know.
Sure.
I've got to do something. So what is it that's going to perpetuate this happiness without sacrificing it? Because I think sometimes when people get that nest egg of happiness, they do things like just hibernate there for years and years and years until they finally pass away. But that yearning for more, willing to risk really what's making you happy to add a little bit on, what would drive someone to go ahead and think in that direction and take that risk when they're already happy? Is it, I want to leave the world a better place and I, you know, have more of a debt to pay to society before I pop my mortal coil? Or what's your view on that?
I think, I mean, we all have, you know, I mentioned the word don, which is a great talent. It could be even love. You know, maybe you're a loving person. You know, keep giving more of that love. You know, think of yourself as constantly expanding and growing and giving more of who you are until at the very end, there's nothing left to give. I mean, you know, when you're on your deathbed, you say, hey, I'm so happy because I've used every ounce of my power, my nature, my abilities, my talents to really actualize myself, to help people, to fulfill my destiny. And that is the amazing feeling that at the end of life, you have that instead of regret. Some people have regret. You know, I should have left that job years earlier or that relationship. I should have done what I really wanted to do, to be a violinist, to be a, you know, travel the world, go to the Himalayas, whatever it is. But you are on your deathbed. You say, wow, I never got, like you said, status quo. I never got, you know, too content. I was always expanding. I was always growing. So at the very end, I've used every single ounce of this life in a beautiful and positive way. And I'm very happy because of it. So that's a driving mission. You know, use every ounce that you have of life to love, to give, to expand. And at the very end, you know, you are where you are. You know, you're content. You're totally happy.
You know, deathbed regrets aren't happy thoughts, are they?
Not at all. Unfortunately, some people do have that. But if you filled your life with such gusto that, you know, you don't even know when you're transferring out. I mean, you've lived such an amazing life. You know, you leave your body and then, you know, you might go to another place, depending on your belief system, your faith. But then, you know, that's all there is. You know, you really have fulfilled every ounce of who you are. And as you know, Maslow talked about self-actualization and reaching the highest point, which we're always striving for. But maybe there is a point where you reach that, you know, at the very end of life. And that's an amazing feeling.
Yeah, you know, tied with that is this social media-driven idea of FOMO, fear of missing out. Mm. In other words, if I don't get to do everything that I want to do and cross off every item off of my bucket list, I've somehow failed. And of course, there's no way on earth in our lifetimes we can possibly do everything and get to it all and have all those experiences. So that's where it comes full circle to contentment, doesn't it?
Yeah, I mean, in some ways, I'm a little old school. I remember days when there was no cell phone, no internet. And I would be writing a book or like reading something. I was so content and happy. I didn't have to be distracted by all the news items and all the, you know, texts and phone calls and things like that. And I know we're in a different time, you know, and there are great advantages to technology. It connects people in many ways. But there is an overload, you know, sensory overload, especially for people that are what we call highly sensitive or internal energy people. It becomes too much. You know, we have so many data, so much information. So I think the idea of, you know, finding that don, maybe one or two things that you do great, you're great at, you know, maybe you're a great teacher, maybe you're a great mechanic, whatever it is that you love to do and you can help people, focus on that, you know, maybe try to delegate other stuff or not be as focused on it. And that can make you happy as well. You know, you may have heard something called flow, which is a psychologist named Mihaly, who studied these peak moments when we're in this beautiful moment of we lose track of time and space, you know, like you've heard of the runner's high. Where, you know, you just run and, you know, you forget who you are, but you're in a joyful state, a rapture. So some people is being in nature, listening to music, making love with their loved one, being with animals, nature, or children. Whatever it is that gets you to that flow, that peak moment where life is just a beautiful, you know, flow of life. That's what you need to focus on. And that is what gives great happiness and great joy in life is these feelings of flow. And that is by being in the moment, doing something that you love.
Yeah, I think when you have that contentment associated with feeling like you're doing what you were born to do, you know, you can't help but be happy.
I'm happy with you right now. You know, we're just jabbering and talking and, you know, exchanging great ideas. I mean, this is to me, it's a happiness, you know, it's a flow. And that's what it's all about, you know, finding that great joy that you have, that passion, that talent, and flowing with it.
Well, it also has to do with the basic harmony of the universe. I mean, once you're in rhythm and you're in that flow, everything just feels right. It's like anybody who's good at a sport knows that there's a sweet spot in just about every sport.
Yes, the zone.
When you hit a golf ball right, when your swing is right on, and you get every bit of that golf ball, you know it as soon as it leaves your club, you know. And that's what I think can be translated into the larger purpose in your life of doing what you're best at and doing what you were born to do and doing what gives you fulfillment. Because fulfillment can't be anything other than happy, can it?
The peak moments, you know, that's when you have that joy, that happiness. And it doesn't have to be anything spectacular. I mean, it could just be in a great mom, you know, being with your child, raising them the right way, a great dad. Maybe a chef. Maybe you're good at cooking and you love to make cookies and brownies for your neighbors. You give them away to people, you know, like little gifts. Maybe you volunteer for a charity or help the homeless, whatever it is that you love to do, gardening, you know, and you do it on a daily basis. It brings great joy to you and you become better at it. So you're perfecting something and you're doing it with presence and with full awareness. It can be a great feeling of happiness.
Yeah, well, purpose doesn't have to be anything grandiose or complicated or stress-ridden. It's simply what you were born to do. His name is Dr. Alex Avila, and he is a clinical and forensic psychologist, and he's the author of several books, including Love Types, The Gift of Shyness, Guy Types, and The Secret of Happiness, which we've been talking about today. you also need to check in with his podcast, which I'm a guest on as well, called Love University, which you can find on iTunes. And I also want to give you the opportunity to learn more about Dr. Avila and what he's been up to. And I'm going to send you to his website by giving you a special link. And that's www.mountaintoppodcast.com/happiness, HAPPINESS. Because I'm not going to ask you to spell Avila. And we've already had an Alex or two on before. And happiness is easy to remember because it's what we're talking about. So go to www.mountaintoppodcast.com/happiness and learn more about Dr. Alex. And Alex, thank you so much for being on the show today. We've had just a tremendous deep discussion,
which I'm
actually very grateful for. It's made me happy.
Fantastic. I want to give your listeners a happiness challenge for the next 2 weeks. Do three things that make you happy, whether it's your family or activities, and maybe give feedback back. You know, tell your people, tell my people. We want to basically spread happiness. That's our goal and our mission. And that can be amazing because the world can change when we are happy.
Just bring brownies. Be happy. I remember I was on a speaking engagement and I shared the stage with Claudia Cox, who I've had on this show. And she lives in Switzerland.
Oh, wow.
And the speaking engagement was on the East Coast of the United States. And she brought 24 brownies with her from Switzerland and proceeded to give them out one by one to all the people she was sharing the stage with. Yeah, she was our favorite colleague immediately.
So I'll have to bring some Latin flan or something, some dessert.
Oh, that would be great.
Yes. So next day.
Some dulce de leche.
Dulce de leche.
Yes. So, thank you once again for joining us today. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you. Have a good day.
And guys, if you're not yet in on my new website, Unchained Office, go and check that out because we talk about living your own life, being location independent, and what's known as real actual freedom. And listen, guys, I was once in a cubicle job and it was my dream job. It was what I had always wanted, or so I thought, but it wasn't very fulfilling because I was making money for someone else, helping two big companies get richer rather than doing what I felt was what I was born to do without finding that purpose that we've already talked about at length in this show is a huge contributor to making us happy. So go check out www.unchainedoffice, get in on the newsletter, and you can also sign up to talk to me personally for 25 minutes about where you are right now and where you want to be in your life and what adventures you want to go on and what kind of purpose you feel like you have in this life and how to get there. And until I talk to you again real soon, this is Scott McKay from X and Y Communications. Be good out there.
The Mountaintop Podcast is copyright 2016 by X and Y Communications. All rights reserved worldwide. Be sure to visit www.mountaintoppodcast.com for show notes. And while you're there, sign up for the X and Y Communications newsletter. This is Ed Roy Odom speaking for the Mountaintop Podcast.